Good afternoon. You're on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota and FYI politics with Brett Johnson, getting the show started a little bit early today as we are going to be joining in on a press conference from Governor Tim Walz, as it's expected that he is going to be announcing a statewide mandate on mask wearing. Let's see, do we have it fired up quite yet? Nope, looks like they're running a couple of minutes late, but that is largely what they're going to be talking about. Certainly a number of cities throughout Minnesota do currently have currently have mask mandates, but we don't have anything on the state level, and Tim Walz is expected to announce that today, which of course will lead to lots of people saying that they are having their rights infringed upon because they have to wear a mask. Coming up after the press conference, we'll try to dispel some of these myths we often hear about mask wearing. The favorite one I often hear is when they say, or when you hear someone say, well, because of the Americans with Disabilities Act, I am not required to wear a mask because I have asthma or something like that, when that's entirely untrue. That's not at all in the Americans with Disabilities Act. There's no place in there that says that you are not required to wear a mask in public. So we'll go through some other myths, too, once the press conference from Governor Tim Walz wraps up. There is some other news we're going to get through today. We're going to talk more about Trump's secret police force being dispatched to more cities and actually getting the cooperation of some local cities, including Chicago. Ahead as well, we'll get you an update on what's been happening at the state legislature. We'll be talking about who should get credit for getting that police reform bill through, and does that bill go far enough? There are some activists who say it's really doesn't do a whole lot, doesn't go far enough whatsoever. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on the show today. So we do have Governor Tim Walz coming up in just a few minutes. He is expected to be making his announcement about the statewide mask mandate in just a couple of minutes. So we're still waiting for that press conference to go live, but we will carry most, if not the entire news conference, including the part where the media gets to ask questions, since that's sometimes where we get more information about what's happening with COVID-19, especially when yesterday we played back part of the Minnesota Department of Health news conference on the recent spike we've been seeing with COVID-19 numbers in Minnesota. We will have open phone lines coming up probably towards the second half of the show at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll do some other housekeeping here before we get to that news conference, still waiting for that to go live. Want to point out, if you're a member with AM 950 Radio, if you've signed up for that membership over at am950radio.com, we are working on getting some new bonus content posted this week. In fact, one bonus interview will get posted probably later on today. It will be a conversation I had, oh, probably like 3 or 4 months ago with Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown, as we were talking about the history of the Democratic Party in northern Minnesota, and specifically on the Iron Range. We're talking about how Republicans have really gained a foothold in the Iron Range, especially since the election of Donald Trump. So we'll have that posted over at am950radio.com on our member content page. But sounds like that Governor Walz press conference has just got started, so let's go ahead and join in now.
Good afternoon, Minnesota, and thank you for joining us. Since we've been doing this for about the last 4 months, and I think now as we've come to understand the impact that COVID-19 has had on both us as a state and nation and globally, probably nothing in any of our lifetimes has been more disruptive. We have almost 150,000 of our fellow Americans dead, nearly 4 million infected, The rate of acceleration to get to that first million took a couple months, and then it took about another month to get to 2 million, and about 3 weeks to get to 3 million, and 2 weeks to get to 4 million, that these are the way pandemics work. And from the beginning, Minnesota, we said we knew this was going to be a long haul. We said in March that the darker days were ahead of us, and we promised a few things. We said we would use science and we would adjust as the science and the situation warrants us to do so. We continued to say that the health, the safety, and the well-being of Minnesotans was paramount. We understood that we were going to be balancing public health, individual health, and economic viability at the same time. We watched it burn through other countries, and here in the United States, unfortunately, we did not prepare necessarily the way we should have in terms of PPE and in terms of testing. In Minnesota, we said from the beginning, we were building for the long haul. We did not know if this would be a year, 18 months, or what it would take. We knew that the advent of a vaccine would be critical, and we knew that the longer we built time before people got infected, we would not overwhelm our healthcare system, and we would get better with the therapeutics. And I think that is starting to play out, that even as we start to see increasing numbers, we see fewer hospitalizations and even fewer ICUs, and we've been able to drop that critical metric number of people who are killed by COVID-19. And in following that science, we know it hasn't always been easy. It's been incredibly difficult across the country. The economic challenges that have been put to people, the changes in daily life, the missed graduations, the missed weddings, the not being able, as Lieutenant Governor said, to hug grandma, that has happened, and it has exacerbated mental health anguish. We are struggling with and figuring out, and we know we have to get our kids back in school. It's the safest and the best place for them to be able to grow as people, and we need to make sure that that safety extends to their physical health. And so amongst all those things, we've taken measures throughout the time to try and slow the spread of COVID, to try and purchase the things that were necessary, to try and change behaviors in a way that would keep Minnesotans safe. And today we're here to announce another one of those. We're going to announce Executive Order 2081 that will be a Minnesotans must wear a mask indoors, a masking mandate. Now I want to back up for a second on this. Yesterday, President Trump said the worst is yet to come on COVID-19. Pretty ominous, but I think for many of us, a statement that we made in March. I don't think the president's probably wrong as far as the country goes, but I think here in Minnesota, with this mask mandate and with the things that we have done previously to this, I think it is very possible for us to not have the darker days behind us, but for us to start moving forward. If we can get a 90 to 95% compliance, which we've seen the science shows, we can reduce the infection rates dramatically, which slows that spread and breaks that chain. And this is the way, the cheapest, the most effective way for us to open up our businesses, for us to get our kids back in school, for us to keep our grandparents healthy, and for us to get back that life that we all miss so much. We know that the three most critical things in slowing the transmission of COVID and keeping people safe is wearing a mask, washing your hands, and social distancing. The good news is those cost us almost nothing. And as we've seen across the country, businesses have led on this, local localities, and I want to thank those city councils and those mayors and those communities out there that had these debates and moved forward. We try and will continue to try to build the coalition necessary to make these types of steps just the way we do business. I think many of us remember when we moved to no smoking indoors. That battle waged for a while, and then it became the norm. Wearing seat belts. Most recently, hands-free driving. Asking you not to use your cell phone and having a penalty involved if you should choose to do so, not to take away your freedom, but to protect your neighbor from you running into them or you killing yourself by being distracted driving. The mask mandate works the same way. We're going to have Commissioner Malcolm and Commissioner Grove explain some of the details around this, but this is a very simple one. This is one if Minnesotans choose to wear the mask. And just to be clear, we've got an effort to get out about 4 million masks to the Chamber of Commerce across the state, disposable masks. We'll make this easy for you. We'll make sure that the police are there and they have masks on hand. They would much rather give you a mask and have you wear it than give you a ticket. Because in the long run, this is the quickest way to ending the COVID pandemic. It is the surest way to getting us to the therapeutics and the vaccines with the least amount of impact on Minnesotans. And it is the absolute economic key to making sure that businesses are open and stay open. So this is a move that you'll hear the details about to go into effect on Saturday morning. You certainly can start today for that percentage of you, and it is a minority percentage that hasn't been wearing them into places. We'll certainly start on that today, and the sooner we do that, the quicker we'll start to see the numbers go down. The quicker we do that, we'll start to see businesses be able to open back up and stay open. And as I promised and asked and said that we would do, we would try and adjust as the situation adjusts. And our goal is to watch and be smart about strategic openings, all with the goal of not having to go backwards. And this MAPS mandate should ensure that we don't have to do that. And we continue to look forward on the things that we can reopen and re-engage in social life that we want to see. So with that, I'd like to have Lieutenant Governor Flanagan say a few words.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, everyone, so much for being here. Our world changed dramatically about 5 months ago, and the crisis that we have faced has been certainly the most difficult of my lifetime, and certainly for many folks across the state and country. But I've also been incredibly moved by the acts of compassion and community and kindness, from donating over 7,000 homemade masks back in April has been certainly the most difficult of my lifetime, and certainly for many folks across the state and country. But I've also been incredibly moved by community and kindness, from donating over 7,000 homemade masks back in April, to taking to the streets to demand justice for George Floyd, to the thousands of hours and dollars that have gone towards the most vulnerable folks in our state during this time. That's who Minnesotans are. We have struggled together, we have learned together, and we have grown together. And among the things that we have learned is that homemade masks, while not a replacement for personal protective equipment, is one of the best ways that we can keep ourselves and other people safe. Masking limits the spread of COVID-19, and my mask protects you, your mask protects me, and when we both wear them, it keeps both of us that much safer. Today's announcement is the best thing that we can do to make public places safe all across the state. It's how we keep businesses open, it's how we socialize safety, and it's how we embrace a new normal in this moment. But above all, we do this because it will help save lives. 4 months ago yesterday, I lost my brother, Ron Golden, to complications from COVID-19. He had recently started treatment for cancer, and his immune system was compromised. To some, he was a statistic, the second person in the state of Tennessee to die from COVID-19. But to me, he was my big brother. And I share this with you today because the masking requirement, of course, will be an adjustment to towns and cities and counties across the state. But I share this with you because I want you to know how seriously we take this issue. In these towns and cities and counties that a masking requirement, you know, has not, in these towns and cities and counties across the state, where folks maybe haven't yet experienced COVID-19, that's where this masking requirement becomes even more important, so that the spread doesn't even begin in the first place, to prevent one or two cases from becoming dozens, and to prevent dozens from becoming deaths. Despite all we have learned, the virus is still unpredictable. We do not know yet what the long-term effects are. We cannot predict who may require hospitalization or ICU care. We do not have consistently effective treatments for those who fall seriously ill. The best thing that we can do to protect each other, especially those who are at high risk for severe complications and death, is from getting folks sick in the first place by wearing masks. I miss my brother every day. and we have not yet had the opportunity to come together to memorialize my brother. I pick up the phone regularly to send him a text or a cute photo of his niece. And then I remember that he's gone. So every death that we prevent is another family, another community that does not have to experience this kind of grief. I just want to be clear that we're not introducing this mask mandate to be a drag. Or for some folks who may be separated politically on different sides of the aisle, I don't care what your background is, your political affiliation, your identity. I don't want your family to have to experience what my family has gone through. It's that simple. And wearing a mask is a way that we can do that together. Adjusting to wearing face masks may be a little uncomfortable, but you'll get used to it. They can be stylish and buffalo plaid. But it's also a way that we just show as Minnesotans that we care about each other. And I think that that's something that we're good at. So I invite Minnesotans to learn more about how to wear masks effectively and to make sure that we are doing everything possible to make this work together. It's worth it. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to Commissioner Jan Malcolm.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for your warm heart and reminding us about what's behind the statistics. It's lives, our families, our friends, ourselves, our state. So thank you for that. Thank you, Governor. This is another important step forward in our fight against COVID-19 in Minnesota. And we know that everybody's tired of this. Everybody's wants to be done with it and wants to get back to everything that we are missing and have missed and to get back to normal. But as the governor and lieutenant governor have said many a time, it's going to be a new normal for quite a while, and we're going to be living with COVID-19 for quite some time to come. And wearing masks whenever we are not in our homes, whenever we are not just with our own household cohort, is one of the ways that we can best live with this together. I'm going to shorten up my remarks a little bit because we have some really important leaders in our community for you to hear from, but I do want to just share a little bit of the data with you and give you the high level of what is contained in the executive order. You know, until we have the weapons that the governor has talked about and the lieutenant governor, effective treatments and a vaccine, our best weapons against this are community mitigation and reliable information. A quick side note. We were gratified yesterday that Minnesota is on the right track when it comes to having the information that we need to fight this virus. An analysis by a national nonprofit headed by the former Centers for Disease Control Director Tom Frieden, ranked Minnesota as the best among the 50 states in our reporting of key COVID-19 data. We know there's always more work to do to get the right data and to make it accessible to the public and to decision makers. And we will continue that work, but we were really gratified to see that the work we have done to date is validated and appreciated by national public health leaders. With regard to community mitigations, the governor said it, the big three, we know what they are: social distance, avoiding crowds, avoiding close sustained contact, hand hygiene, and masking. We can do this. We've learned so much more in the last few months, and we recognize that there were some mixed messages early on about whether masks worked or not, or in what situations they might be valuable, and who should wear them and who didn't need to. But we've learned so much more in just the last few months, and the evidence has really gotten compelling. We know how the virus is spread. We know that it can be transmitted much more than we thought at first, simply by normal speaking, much less loud speaking, singing, chanting, partying, the things you do when there's a lot of noise in the atmosphere or when it's part of the activity that you're doing. So masks help to control the spread of the virus through the droplets and the aerosols that come literally come out of our mouths. The journal Health Affairs recently published a very thorough study that reported how to what degree masks reduce the rate of spread of COVID in terms of cases and eventually deaths. And according to that publication, states that have mandated face masks have seen a greater decline in their daily growth rate. And these measures nationally are estimated to have already averted between 230,000 and 450,000 cases of COVID-19 to date by those who have worn masks either under mandate or voluntarily. At the end of June, Goldman Sachs shared an analysis projecting the amount by which further masking would slow COVID transmission and even save our country significant percentage points in GDP as compared to having to shut down the economy again to stop this tidal wave. Forbes just published an analysis comparing 21 states that had a form of mandatory mask policy with those that did not. The average increase in new COVID cases over the previous 14 days in those states with a mandatory mask policy was 16%. In states without a mask mandate, the average rise in new cases was 79%. There have been recent national estimates showing that whether we do or don't succeed in hitting that 95% public compliance with mask wearing between now and the end of the year could mean the difference in quadrupling the number of deaths that are projected in our country by the end of the year, whether we continue to socially distance and whether we wear masks. These are not trivial improvements in slowing down the rate of disease and ultimately death. And as the Lieutenant Governor said, we're doing this to protect each other. We've been saying for months now, I wear a mask to protect you, you wear a mask to protect me. Even for those among us who think we may not be at serious risk of illness, we have to remember that as many as 40% of all people with COVID-19 do not show obvious signs of illness during the time that they can transmit the virus, yet they still can pass that infection along to someone at higher risk. And no one wants to take that chance with a friend or a loved one. And while it's true that older people and people with existing underlying health conditions do tend to get much more severe disease, we've seen plenty of evidence in our own state that this disease can be deadly and very serious for younger people and for those without any known complications. And we're also learning now about very serious health consequences that emerge later on, months later in some cases, in people who had very mild cases of illness. So none of us should think that we are immune ourselves from severe consequences of COVID-19. But again, the key consideration here, because of the fact that so many people can spread this without knowing that they're infected, that is the reason that CDC says it's so important that masks be worn by everyone, essentially everyone, in public settings or when around others outside of their own immediate households. And we've known, as the evidence has been growing, that this would be a good thing for people to do, and we've been strongly recommending that people use face coverings since April. But in recent weeks, as we've seen more of this evidence, as we've seen the results of the difference that mandating the mask makes, the governor has chosen to take this next step for Minnesota. As of Monday, 28 states, including Washington, D.C., plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, had implemented face coverings. I know a couple more just did today. More than a dozen cities in Minnesota have implemented this, including really all of the major population centers. But with today's order, the governor is extending this population to all Minnesotans and helping to create a consistent expectation for all of us, helping to normalize this critical behavior to live with COVID, as the Lieutenant Governor so eloquently said. So as of essentially midnight on Friday, Saturday morning at 12 a.m., Minnesotans must wear a face covering in indoor businesses and indoor public settings. Workers must also wear face coverings outdoors when it is not possible to maintain social distancing. The order is quite detailed. It lays out a number of specifics which are contained in the executive order itself and are also posted on the Stay Safe Minnesota website. And on the Health Department website, we have a frequently asked questions document, which is just going up. that details the circumstances under which mask wearing is mandatory versus when it is strongly suggested, when it's okay to remove the mask temporarily, and it also spells out who is exempt from this order, including people with certain medical conditions or people with some forms of physical and mental disabilities, as well as children under five. So in order to be effective, a face covering must be worn in such a way that it covers the nose and the mouth completely. There's a wide range of types of masks that are effective, including paper or disposable, cloth, scarves, bandanas, neck gaiters, or religious face coverings. And there's plenty of guidance out there about where to get masks and how to make homemade masks. So we also, as I mentioned, there are a number of settings which are exempt from the governor's order, but may be subject to specific rules for those settings, specifically tribal nations, the judicial settings, and the like. Specifications around those with medical and mental health conditions or disabilities are laid out in the executive order. It's about really excluding people from this requirement who have conditions that compromise their ability to breathe. But in those cases, people are urged to consider alternatives to face coverings that might be suitable for them, including clear face shields and certainly, again, further limiting their contact with people outside of their home. For children 5 years old and under, those who are under 2 years old really should never wear face coverings due to their higher risk of suffocation and people not able to see what's happening with them. But it's a good idea, even though the exemption applies to under five, for those above two to wear face coverings if they can as well. There are specific guidances that have been in place for preschool and pre-kindergarten, at K-12, higher education, that are all spelled out in the guidance as well. So within the school and higher ed environments, there will be requirements there laid out for students, staff, and other people in those settings. But in the interest of time and to turn this over to other speakers, I will forego detailing those. But I do want to end by saying we appreciate very much that the statewide mask policy was a strong desire of many, many stakeholders. You'll hear from some, including the Minnesota disability community. And we want to thank the Council on Disability for their advocacy on this issue and to reaffirm our support and our commitment to our neighbors who are at risk and who have underlying medical complications. And I do want to acknowledge that cloth masks are a challenge for Minnesota's deaf and hard of hearing population and that we ask everyone to be considerate and accommodating of our deaf and hard of hearing community. For example, having transparent face masks on hand or having alternate means of communication available, like note writing or video sign language, is a great accommodation that businesses and organizations can offer. With that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Steve Grove.
Thank you, Jan, Governor, Lieutenant Governor. Hello, Minnesota. We have, of course, throughout the past several weeks, as we have been looking at the possibility of doing this mandate, really been heartened to see how many businesses have already taken this step themselves. We've seen large national chains based here in Minnesota, like Target, Best Buy, Caribou, Cub Foods, all institute their own masking requirements on their own. In towns and cities across Minnesota, Coburn's in St. Cloud, the River Market in Stillwater, on and on and on. We've seen businesses take this step without government asking them to do it because they know how important it is to keep our economy open and to keep it thriving. Put simply, we've got to wear masks to keep our economy open and to pave the way to open it even further. And you know, the data really shows this too. A mandate's important. Goldman Sachs has looked at what the effect of mandates are on compliance with mask wearing, and they saw a 25% jump in mask wearing when a mandate existed. So this is a really important move we want to make, and it's an important economic one too. That same study showed that mask wearing can prevent up to a 5% GDP loss across our country when we avoid additional lockdown measures that would come if we were not wearing masks. So, yes, this is an issue rooted in health, but it's really also rooted in growing our economy and allowing it to keep growing and to keep job growth moving in a very difficult time. You know, as we've been examining this order and how to get it right, of course, we've been talking to hundreds of businesses across the state, labor groups, community organizations. We've been reviewing the policies of dozens of states and cities across the country. Just this week, Bemidji went forward with a policy. Eagan last night, my hometown of Northfield last night, put a policy in place. So again, we at the state level are really following the lead of so many of our partners in business and communities across the state. And really good policies are based in some basic core principles. First of all, individuals are responsible for wearing masks. Second, businesses have to be a partner in that effort. Third, there's some really basic kind of common sense exceptions that you have to have in order to get this right. And then when it comes to enforcement, enforcement is really not the end goal. It's there to target flagrant offenders. The end goal is simply compliance. And so in putting this order together, we took all of that into consideration in writing this up. Commissioner Malcolm mentioned some of the basics. I'll go a bit further on some of this as it applies to business. Again, masking is required for workers indoors and in outdoor settings when they can't practice social distancing. That includes workers who may be out and about going into people's living units for business purposes, whether that's deliveries or repair work, et cetera. Customers need to wear masks indoors, or if you're waiting in line outdoors to go to an indoor facility. This includes public transportation, taxis, Ubers, and the like as well. Now, again, there's some common sense exceptions to all of this. So Commissioner Malcolm mentioned some of the health reasons. If there are reasons from a health consideration that you can't wear a mask, you do not need to do so. And if you tell a business that you are not wearing a mask for health reasons, that's where it ends. Businesses do not need to get into a conversation with you about your health background on that. You know, obviously, if you're eating or drinking at a restaurant, you don't have to wear a mask. We ask that you wear it into the facility. When you're engaging with your server, please wear it to protect that server and use it when you're moving about the restaurant. But when you're just with your party eating or drinking, of course, you don't need to wear a mask. Same goes for if you're exercising at a gym, that kind of strenuous activity. When you're on that treadmill running, you don't got to wear a mask, but in those in-between times, have it on you. For workers, if you are engaged in strenuous work, you don't have to wear it, but again, keep it on you to use when you need. And then, of course, if you're working alone in an office or in a cube with walls high enough to prevent the spread, or if you're in a clearly separated area of work, a mask is not required. So just some basic common sense stuff the businesses told us needs to be in here to get this right. And really, you know, this is something that in order to get right from an enforcement perspective, we have to partner with business. The interests are really aligned here. No business wants to be the next hotspot for COVID, the next COVID-19 transmission spot. That's bad for business. So we are collaborating with business to make sure it's just super clear what it means to be compliant if you are a business. First of all, it means you have to ensure all of your workers are masked, again, unless they meet some of those exceptions. You need to adjust your COVID-19 preparedness plan to include information around masking so it's just really clear to both customers and workers what these requirements are. You got to post a sign, a clear sign where customers are coming into the business or where workers may come in, indicating that masks are required. We do have some signs available for download and printing on the Minnesota Stay Safe COVID-19 website. I'll be honest with you, I think the best signs are actually the homemade ones, the one the business makes themselves. It shows investment by the business there, but of course we did want to provide some if that's useful. And then there'll be instances in which a customer comes in and isn't wearing a mask. In that instance, we ask that businesses treat that customer in the same way that you would treat any challenging customer situation. Of course, asking them to wear a mask is important. If that response is they're not doing it for health reasons, of course, as I said before, you leave it there. But beyond that, you engage that customer in the same way you would handle any other difficult customer in terms of mitigating the effect and ensuring that you can keep your business safe. If you do those things, you are compliant, and there are some further best practices in the executive order and in the FAQs online that will go into some of the things you can do to help mitigate some of the more challenging situations. Bottom line is we don't want businesses to have to feel like they're forcing this as a sort of mask police out there. We don't want physical altercations on this. We want a thoughtful conversation and for it to be clear what the requirements are and for Minnesotans to do the right thing. One of the things the governor mentioned that we are really excited about is to make this transition a little bit easier on businesses. We are working with the Department of Administration. Commissioner Alice Roberts Davis has been able to mobilize 4 million disposable masks that we are distributing through chambers of commerce throughout the state as early as this Friday. We thought it important to get some masks out into the hands of businesses because in tough economic times, no one wants to turn away a customer because they forgot their mask at home. And so these disposable masks will be available. We're working with chambers in all 88 counties of the state to disperse these. It's a one-time shipment. Again, it's just to kind of help get things started, but we hope an important aspect of this to make sure that businesses have a leg up as we begin this new order starting this Saturday. So again, we really believe this is an important economic move as much as it is a health move. This is an important part of paving the way for further reopenings. If we can get this right, get our indicators in a better place, we want to see more commerce happen in this state, and masks are just such a cheap and easy and simple and important way to get there. With that, I want to introduce a couple of business leaders who can share much more about how important this is for business. First, we're going to hear from Hannah Pura and then from Houston White. Hannah comes to us from Bemidji. She runs a gift shop up there called Compass Rose. In the summer of 2016, she opened up this gift shop, and she's done so much in her community to help individuals attack this pandemic and help other business owners too. And she's going to tell us a little bit more about why masking is important for her business up in Bemidji. Hannah.
Hi, Minnesota. So I've been asked by the governor's office to share my story and position on wearing masks in public. I'm here to speak on behalf of my small business. I'm not here to speak on behalf of other small businesses or any other industries. I just want to share my personal business story with you. So if we haven't met yet, my name is Hannah Pura. I'm the owner of Compass Rose, a home and gift shop located in the heart of Bemidji, Minnesota. In fact, Paul and Babe are just up the street from my shop. 4 years ago, I had a dream, I quit my day job, and I leaped into the adventure of being a small business owner. It sounds like it was a breeze, but it's been more like a beautiful storm. We've been in business for the past 4 years. We started as an online business with our warehouse being our guest bedroom at our house, and now we have over 2,500 square feet of retail space. Each year has come and gone with its challenges. However, this year has been different for everyone. Change is the only constant in life and in business, but this year the changes were greater than they've ever been. At the beginning of the year, we didn't know if we'd be able to keep our doors open long enough to welcome the tourist crowd that fills our town come May. It was scary. I couldn't pay my employee. I couldn't pay myself. Rent was late. Invoices were due. And then the COVID crisis hit. Our store was forced to shut down, and the panic set in. Luckily, our store manager's official title is Chaos Coordinator. So Kelly and I began to listen to our customers and see what they were asking, and then pivoted to meet our community's needs. This is the beauty and necessity of a small business. As time went on and we learned more about COVID on a weekly basis, the talk about wearing a mask shifted. Our friends were asking if we were going to sell masks in our store, and at first I said no. When we were able to open up our shop again, we gave our friends a choice to shop with us however they felt most comfortable. We even had a sign up that said, "We get it. Things are weird, and we want to accommodate and respect your comfort level and your preferred shopping experience." So, along with curbside pickup, free delivery in the Bemidji area, we also continued to sell our products online to meet our customers where they were with their COVID comfort level. Now, Bemidji is a community with a population of approximately 16,000, and in the surrounding area, there's about 50,000. It's also a favorite tourist destination, the home of Bemidji State University, and it acts as a hub for northern Minnesota. So there's lots of people traveling in and out of our community all year long, and as we started to learn more about how the virus spread, my views about masking began to change again. It wasn't until the COVID cases in our community started to rise dramatically in the last month that I started to consider mandating masks in our shop. Local businesses were closing their doors to allow employees to get tested, and that's when it really hit home for me. You see, our business isn't just a business, it's home. If you don't count sleeping, I probably spend more hours inside my business at Compass Rose than I do at my own house. We welcome hundreds of friends into our shop weekly from all over the world, and because of those friends, our customers, I'm in support of wearing a mask. We cannot afford to shut down for 2 weeks. We can't afford for our employees and their families to get sick. I love our town, and therefore the sacrifice to wear a mask is small in comparison to the risk of those around me. On Monday night, our hometown of Bemidji took the steps towards mandating masks in public areas. So today, I appreciate the support from the governor that helps protect small businesses like mine throughout the state. In a way, it helps level the playing field for businesses, and it really takes the pressure off of business owners like myself to not have to make that difficult decision. Our lives are a string of moments and connections. That's what makes the journey of life so grand. Our mission at Compass Rose is to provide goods that help to create a symbol or reminder of those memorable moments in our lives. The world doesn't need more stuff, but to fill the community with more experiences, connections, and joy through gift giving. I never thought I would say this, but face masks have now become a part of those life's moments. If wearing a mask can contribute to curbing the spread of COVID, I feel like it's a small price to pay to protect the business that I've worked so hard to build and for those that have helped me build it. Thank you for listening today, Minnesota. And Houston White will now share his story.
Hello, everyone. Lieutenant Governor, Governor Walz, man I consider a friend. I never imagined I'd live through a time like this. I've had some tough times in my life. I lost my wife. And I can only imagine what so many people throughout this world and throughout this country have experienced as a result of a pandemic. Taking their loved ones, so I get it. Governor, I just want to extend a debt of gratitude for your leadership during this very difficult time in our state and our country. You know, as I said, I'm Houston White. I'm a kid from North Minneapolis. I own a barbershop. And for those of you who don't know, in the black community, barbershop is like a sanctuary for some. It's a very important institution in our community. And I've grappled with when to open, how to open, because so many people come to the shop, not just for the transactional. Learn. As you said, it's a community space. And it's so important. And as much as I want to...
And we're on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Unfortunately, sounds like we're having a bit of a connection issue with that news conference, but you got the main points of what's been happening. We are having now a statewide mandate for mask wearing throughout the entire state of Minnesota, but there are some exceptions, including those with disabilities, which is going to potentially lead down a very slippery slope, being that I've already seen lots of cases where people claim they have a disability, even though they very likely don't, and they say, therefore, I don't have to wear a mask. Unfortunately, I kind of see that potentially going in a bad direction. We'll talk more about what's in that mandate and some other local and national news on our final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson here on AM 950.
Not only does Rudy Luther Toyota have a great selection of new vehicles, but Rudy Luther is also one of the largest volume Toyota certified used vehicle dealers in the country. They have better prices than many non-certified dealers, and all their vehicles go through a comprehensive inspection and reconditioning process. And Rudy Luther pays you top dollar for your trade-in, even if you don't buy a vehicle from them. Whether looking for an upgrade or looking to get rid of a car you no longer need, you'll get a great return with Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
Hi, this is Frank Brown, owner of Minuteman Press Uptown. While it's true Minuteman Press Uptown provides the highest quality printing services and graphic design, there's another important reason you should choose us. We give back to the community and stand up for social justice. At Minuteman Press Uptown, we understand Black Lives Matter and know love is love. We're the only minority-owned union shop in the state. While we take pride in our work with over 100-plus years of industry experience, we also know it's important to be involved in our community. That's why we're active in the Twin Cities working for racial, social, and economic justice. We are supporting our community as we rebuild and come together. We have Black Lives Matter yard signs available and can print the slogan on masks and most anything you can think of. Work with a printer that shares your values for all your printing needs. Minuteman Press Uptown, located on Hennepin Avenue, one block south of Franklin Avenue. Learn more at mpuptown.com. That's Minuteman Press Uptown. We print everything.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly sunny skies today with a high near 77. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 61. Thursday, sunny with a high near 84. And Friday, sunny with a high around 92. Join Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces for their annual store-wide sale, where you'll find the guaranteed lowest prices of the year. It takes place through the end of July, and they have a diverse selection of fireplace products. Located at 2901 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, learn more at woodlandstoves.com.
Minnehaha Falls Landscaping creates outdoor environments that grow beauty and support health and wellness. We provide everything needed for people and pollinators to grow healthy together in the home landscape. Contact us for landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, rain gardens, and bee lawns. Minnehaha Falls Landscaping is a business rooted in healthy soil. We rely on soil health to beautify landscapes, restore ecosystems, and protect pollinators. We love sharing our soil secrets with everyone. Visit us at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Schroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Schroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Finding the right lawyer is incredibly stressful. It can be tough to know even where to start. Don't just run an internet search for an attorney. Start with the Minnesota Lawyer Referral and Information Service, an enhanced program of the Hennepin and Ramsey County Bar Associations. They'll connect you with over 200 thoroughly vetted, qualified attorneys practicing in over 50 areas of law. Call 612-752-6699 or go to mnlawyerreferral.org. The right call for the right lawyer.
The Minnesota Army National Guard salutes the high school graduating class of 2020. We recognize all of your hard work and the resilience you've demonstrated during this historic time for our country. Those are the traits of a great citizen soldier. You can continue to stand out and be a leader in your community as a soldier in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Learn more about the benefits of part-time service in the Army National Guard at NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
And we're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We have a new statewide mask-wearing mandate, which has been put in place by an emergency order from Governor Tim Walz. Some other highlights from that emergency order is that the state is going to be working with different chambers of commerce from around the state to distribute disposable masks in case businesses don't already have access to masks. They can pass them out to customers so they don't have to deny anyone entry. One of the other big highlights was that, well, if you are a business, you can't deny someone service if they say, I can't wear a mask because of my disability. You can technically use that as an excuse. I think that's very much a slippery slope we're potentially going down. But their logic, at least from the state level, is that they don't want to get into a situation where you have a business asking someone about their history of whatever disability they claim they have, which I certainly get.
I'm just I could see this going down a bad path where we're going to have a Karen or have a MAGA hat wearing guy walk into an establishment and say, I don't need to wear a mask because I have asthma or I have whatever else. I've seen a lot of these take place elsewhere around the country. So this is largely going to rely on people following the honor system. They brought up in that conference, too, that they're really not going to have, like, the mask-wearing police going out to businesses and fining places or fining individuals for not complying with the order. As they say, it's mostly going to be about education rather than enforcement. And in fact, they'll only go down at the enforcement area if they're truly going up against someone who is very much a serial offender of the policy. But yep, that has been put in place, and there are some obvious exceptions in there as well, including if you're, for instance, at a gym, you of course have to wear that mask if you're in the commons area, but once you get on that treadmill or the exercise bike, obviously you don't need to be wearing the mask there. Same thing with restaurants, where when you're in the common area, got to put those on, but you can certainly take them off when you're getting ready to go and eat at that establishment. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Want to get to some other pieces of news before we wrap things up today and turn things over to Matt McNeil at 3 o'clock, then Robert and Wendy Pilot at 5 o'clock. Looks like things are really going to come to a head in the city of Minneapolis between, well, the city council and the Charter Commission. Because to defund the police, or at least make changes to the police department, that's really what the proposal is that the city council passed, it does require the Charter Commission to be on board to change the Minneapolis Charter. Because right now, within Minneapolis's constitution, also known as a charter, you must have 0.0017 police officers per resident, which comes to roughly 800 officers in the city. And in order to go below that threshold, you need to get a change to the charter, or like a change to the city's constitution. Now, the city council is fully on board with this, but the Charter Commission, not so much, according to what happened at a meeting earlier this week. In fact, they've gone ahead and drafted their own slightly watered down proposal. But what's interesting about this with this charter commission is that it's made up of 15 individual citizens who are appointed by a judge. Now, I was trying to figure out which judge actually gets to appoint the members of the charter commission, but I couldn't find any information on this. But these aren't just, from the looks of it, average, ordinary people that get appointed to this charter commission. In fact, Minnesota Reformer was talking and reporting about this meeting that took place earlier this week. And they pointed out that one of the members of this charter commission named Andrew Kozak has quite the history of being a lobbyist at the state capitol. His clients include American Express, Ameriprise, the University of Minnesota, Flint Hills Resources, which is significant because Flint Hills Resources happens to be owned by the Koch brothers. Other clients include tobacco giant RAI. So these aren't exactly average folks that sit on this commission. Some of them are very well connected politically and in terms of lobbying efforts. In fact, all 15 members of this charter commission are white, which certainly doesn't exactly match up with the demographics of Minneapolis. And it wouldn't be the first time, if the Charter Commission does point on this, that they've done something similar. In 2018, there was another potential change to the charter that was put through that would give the city council more authority over the police department. What the commission did back then was say, oh, we don't have enough time to put this on the 2018 general election ballot. We'll punt on it. And from there, the proposal went nowhere, and the fear is that this could happen yet again with another proposal that, of course, was just recently passed by the city council that would make changes to the Minneapolis City Charter and how the police department functions. Getting into some other news before we wrap things up today. This is also being reported by Patrick Coulican over at Minnesota Reformer, talking about how Republicans in the state Senate largely came on board with police reform due to pressure from Fortune 500 companies. Now, the logic as to why these Fortune 500 companies were in favor of the police reform bill that was passed was that they were saying that they struggled before, well, all of what happened back in May and June, they were struggling to recruit people of color to move to the state. And their logic is that, well, at least by passing this police reform bill, it could help with some recruitment efforts for Fortune 500 companies to get non-white people to work for their companies. How about this, Patrick Lilia? Are you a fan of state fair food, like those Sweet Martha cookies, among others, Pronto Pups? You a fan of those things?
I love that stuff.
Well, even though the state fair is not happening this year, you can pay $20 and drive through the state fair and get all that food. That was just announced today by the state fair, where you can get your tickets at mnstatefair.org. Like usual with the state fair, though, it's certainly a money grab because you have to pay $20 up front to even go down this 1.5-mile route. And once you go down that 1.5-mile route, that $20 fee you paid at the beginning, that doesn't cover the food you actually need to pay for. So as you can imagine, this would be a pretty expensive trek if you decide to do the 1.5-mile drive through the state fairgrounds and try to get your Tom Thumb donuts, your foot-long hot dogs, your corn dogs, your Sweet Martha cookies, among others. Although I didn't see Pronto Pumps. I don't think those are included on there, but that's a steep fee. $20 just to drive through the thing, and that doesn't even cover what you have to pay to the actual food vendors. I don't think I'm signing up for that. How about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, it's getting into the fairgrounds isn't free either. It's about, you know, $12 or $13. I mean, you can argue it's a lot more money to pay to just, you know, get in to drive down. And while I have to admit, I haven't seen the, you know, overall model of this yet, so I'd have to get a better look at that. But, you know, it's a thought. I mean, like I said, it's not free to get in, so it's. I mean, I understand it's more expensive than a regular fare ticket, but, you know.
I don't know, $20 just to drive through the thing? I mean, I get what you're saying, where you have to pay to normally get into the fare, but normally you're getting a whole lot else included with your ticket outside of just the ability to buy food. You can see lots of other attractions, and of course that's not an option with the food drive this year, so yeah, I probably won't be a fan or won't be someone who will be paying those $20 to go drive through the state fair and buy different food items that you can normally find over at the state fair. All right, I'm just about out of time for my show, but before I leave you, I do want to give you a preview of what's coming up on Robert Pilot's show tonight. Robert and Wendy Pilot, of course, are hosting Pilot's Progressive Party, and coming up on their show tonight at 5 o'clock, he is going to be speaking with Ernest Joseph Opregard Peltier III from the Bemidji City Council, and he'll be talking with Nancy Bilyeu about the Rock the Vote Native Style show, which we're going to be debuting next Tuesday from 2 until 3. But Pilot's Progressive Party tonight at 5, and then Matt McNeil's show is coming up next here on AM 950.